This is a Glassbox Media podcast.
What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
This podcast is sponsored by Ramp. Are you the decision maker in your company? Consider this. For the first time in decades, there's a better option for a corporate card and spend management platform. Meet Ramp, the only corporate card and spend management system designed to help you spend less money so you can make more. Most corporate credit cards offer points as incentives, but those points amount to less than their worth in real cash value. Ramp's business cards offer you cash back, real money in your pocket. Plus, you control who spends what with each vendor. And Ramp software collects and verifies receipts automatically, which means you'll stop wasteful spending and close your books in hours instead of days. Businesses that use Ramp add up to 5% to their bottom line the first year. If you're a decision maker, adding Ramp could be one of the best decisions you've ever made. And now get $250 when you join Ramp for free. Just go to ramp.com/easy. Ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy.
Cards issued by Sutton Bank and Celtic Bank, members of FDIC. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to The Blank Podcast, the podcast where we talk to well-known people about their lives, their careers and those difficult moments along the way. I'm Giles Paley-Phillips and with me, looking more clear now, is Jim Daly.
as opposed to the other night when we recorded and I had no light on my face.
No, it's more the fact that that you looked a bit unclear. The Zoom feed had sort of made you look distorted.
Zoom is doing nothing for my image. Absolutely nothing.
No,
not helping me out at all.
Don't think it's doing anything good for anybody's image, to be fair.
No. That's good. It's good that I'm coming through clear. I feel clear at the moment, actually. I feel quite clear with life in general, so that's quite good. Good to know that I'm clear physically and metaphorically as well. How are you? Are you feeling clear?
I am feeling clear. And actually, I just got a parcel through from the post office, obviously, for a new... So I've been... Listeners might know this, but some listeners might know this. I do play in a band, or several colour bands, actually, and I've been changing all my gear up. So I've sold my... I had a big amp that was taking up too much space and was too loud to play in the house. So I've sold that and I've bought something smaller, which is still hasn't turned up yet, but hopefully soon. But I've been buying some new guitar pedals, and through today, which I kind of bought just because of the name of it. I'm just going to grab it so you can see it.
Okay. This is very exciting.
It's called a chorus. It's a chorus pedal effect, basically, which is sort of makes things sound like aqua sort of sound. The beginning of Come As You Are by Nirvana's got a chorus effect on it. Anyway, this is made by a company called Deadbeat, and it's called Wet Dreams.
I'm sure that coming off from the credit card statement took some explaining to Michelle.
Well, I tell Michelle, my wife, last night, I bought this pedal. It's called Wet Dreams.
It's definitely
a pedal. It's not a website. It's definitely
That's cool.
Yeah. So anyway,
pedals are for people that aren't maybe sort of don't play or have a guitar or anything. Pedals can be very addictive. I don't have any, but I play music through Logic, and through Logic you can have pedal effects and stuff on there. And I can see your pedal board there.
Yeah.
I used to live with a musician guy called Jim Dare, who lived in Streatham, absolutely top man. He used to play in a band called Minuteman.
I know Minuteman.
Jim was in Minuteman, and he was also Brett Anderson's guitarist when he did solo stuff. Great guy, great guitarist. But he, same as you, like him buying pedal boards and stuff like that. It was like Christmas for him. He just got excited over it. So I completely understand how excited he'd be now.
Well, back in the day when I first started playing, I mean, there were lots of different pedals, but they were mainly kind of Boss was the kind of big manufacturer. Sorry, this is very boring for our listeners. But now there's all these sort of really small boutique pedal companies, in particularly in America. So they make all these boutique pedals, and they're so expensive. I mean, ridiculous. You know, I've got one pedal here that's like nearly 200 quid.
Whoa. So why don't we put on our Twitter and Instagram, take a photo of your pedal board, we'll put it on there, and then maybe as and when you buy more, we can update it and stuff. For our musically entwined? For our musically, what's the word I'm looking for? Our musically intuitioned? Musical listeners.
Musical listeners, yeah.
I think they might like that. That'd be quite cool.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, well, it's something I've really got into. So, yeah, it also made me think we need to get some more musical people as guests, actually. So maybe I'll get on that.
Yeah, that'd be good. I think our last one was Graham Coxon.
Yeah.
Great episode.
A little plug for a past episode there, which is great. But today's episode is great as well.
Thank you. We're on the same wavelength. Yes. A fascinating episode this week with Rob Orton, who is a poet, comedian, writer. I mean, there's many strings to his bow. An incredibly thoughtful, intelligent person. And we really go to some depths here, actually, on this episode. It's one of our more thoughtful episodes, I think. But it was absolutely fascinating talking to him. I mean, what an intelligent guy.
Oh, so thoughtful and so candid and insightful about, you know, his own work and about the kind of world at large as well and the human condition. I mean, his book, I Strongly Believe in Incredible Things, is a very uplifting, you know, discovering the beauty in the world and the beauty in life. And it's a really, you know, wonderful thing. And people haven't listened. Rob last year did a podcast every day. I mean, I know we know how much goes into putting a podcast out once a week, but he was doing podcasts every day. And a lot of those ideas that he kind of came up with for the podcaster in the book. And he's just very in tuned with the world, I think, and human beings in particular.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a really, 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 really interesting episode. So I'm sure you guys can enjoy it as much as we do. There is, of course, extra content with Rob at the end of the pod for our patrons. And you can join the Blank Podcast patron at patreon.com/blankpodcast, where Rob delves into his poetry recommendations, which I would 100% recommend listening to if you're a fan of poetry. So definitely worth joining the patron to hear that. I think before we dive in, I think we should read some tweets out from our listeners, and then we'll crack on with Rob's episode.
Yeah, definitely. I've got one here from Julie White. She's Julie WH 478-51200 on Twitter. She says, rare day working from home. Who better to keep me company than the fabulous Blank Pod? Loads to catch up on, but starting, as I mean to go on, with the wonderful Sophie Green.
Oh, good choice. Yeah. Good episode, that. Great choice. So that's a lovely tweet to receive. I've got one here from Dr. H. Hashtag keep safe. Hashtag be kind. Excellent hashtags, Dr. H, I must say.
Those two things are exceptional things to remember.
I think if you're going to lead your life by two hashtags, I actually think that's all you need, those two.
Yeah.
Keep safe and be kind. Actually, outside of that, you can't go wrong, really, can you? I think if you're leading your life by those principles. So,
no, and they're intertwined as well. I think if you're being kind, you're probably keeping safe. And if you're being safe, you're probably being kind.
Absolutely. So, I'm assuming Dr. H is living their life by that, and I think that is a good way to be. Anyway, Dr. H's tweet says, I just finished listening to Blank Pod at the Kerry Howard. A lovely, relaxed interview with a great guest. Another great listener. Well, thank you very much. And yeah, that was a fantastic episode with Kerry. So if you haven't heard that one yet, please do listen to it. She was absolutely brilliant.
Oh, I love Kerry. She's great. Yeah, absolutely great human being. And yeah, it was a great episode.
Speaking of great episode, I think we should crack on with this week's guest. This is the multi-talented, the fantastic Rob Orton on the Blank Podcast.
You look like you're really busy at the moment. You've been gigging a lot.
Yeah. I've just finished my tour that I was doing that started in the 2019, January 2019. And then it stopped in March 2019, and then I rescheduled, kept on rescheduling and rescheduling, and then picked it back up in, when was it? August, started doing them at Soho Theatre, and yeah, it was good. It was it took me a while to remember the energy that I had to give it to get an audience to buy into what I was saying. I thought because I mean I did this show that I've been doing called The Time Show in Edinburgh, and I'd recorded the show every day, and then I was listening to those recordings, and I thought, okay, that's the material, that's how you say it, people laugh at this bit, people laugh at, they're quiet at this bit, just go and do that. And what I didn't realise is that the, it needs me to, like, the material doesn't work just by itself, I've got to put something into it and put energy into it, and yeah, just sell it and kind of throw it at people in a way that they can catch it and digest it. And I had forgotten how to do that, really. So when I was doing the Soho shows, I did 12 nights, and it was only by the eighth one where I had a show that I was pleased with. The shows before that, kind of people were coming up to me after and saying, oh, I really enjoyed that. And then I kind of was thinking, oh no, I know what the show is like when people enjoy it, and I know what it can be, and I felt like I hadn't been delivering it to them. But I mean, you know, we'd just been through a pandemic and everything like that, and are still going through it. But it was, yeah, it's just practices. It's like, isn't it? It's like work. It's just work, isn't it? You've got to remember and
and flex those muscles as well, isn't it? It's all sort of muscle memory almost.
Well, 100%, yeah. And but the main thing that struck me was just how much I've got to put into the show to get it to where I want it to be. Yeah, it was quite staggering, really. Because I'd been gigging quite constantly since about 2009, and I think I'd almost developed like a force field of confidence around me that was not impenetrable. Every now and again, someone would say something to me after a show that would make me question my entire life. But I had a bit of momentum going, you know, and the momentum stopped. But I think it also made me think how incredible the human beings are, as we can just kind of pick up. And hopefully this has just been a small speed bump in the road, but we'll see.
Yeah, fingers crossed. I can't have another speed bump after this. It's been two or three speed bumps in a row. I need a flat road from now here on in.
Yeah, yeah.
I was going to say, are you hard on yourself then when you feel like it's not gone how you want it to go?
Yeah, I am. Unfortunately, I am. I think because I made the decision to do this as a life, really, and I do feel very privileged to be able to do it. But if I feel like I haven't been the best version of me that I could be, and that was a fault of my own, then I am, yeah, I do really, 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 really struggle with that. And I think that it does, it's probably, you know, in classic job interviews say, what are your weaknesses? And people say, I work too hard, you know. And, I don't know if it, who knows what the right path to choose is in life. We just don't know, do we? It's like, okay, well, this feels right. And I just try to go on feeling, really. And if I do a gig and I don't feel very good after it, then, I mean, do I beat myself up? I think if, I really like John Hegley, and he's always saying that you always, well, everyone says it, but he was someone who said it to me, was like, you always think of the best thing that you could have said on the way home from the gig. And, like, I give myself a clip round the ear if I don't get that. I want to be quick, you know, and sometimes I'm not quick enough. And I guess I do beat myself up because I want to be really, really, really good at what I do. And I think everyone does, don't they? And I think I do. Yeah. I think if people do say, oh, they enjoyed it after the show, then, I mean, I don't know. Sometimes I believe them and sometimes I think, you know, it wasn't that good. Or it, but, I mean, I think everyone does that, don't they? And I mean, I'm not trying to paint myself out like someone who people are always saying to me how good the show's up because I wish it was. But it's just brutal. And but it's what life's about. It makes me feel alive, you know. And I think that if I don't make myself feel alive enough, then that gets me down. And that's maybe where anxiety and things like that. No, I think anxiety is different, but I think sadness and being like, you know, getting a bit down with it. But yeah, in short, yes, I am hard on myself.
Yeah.
That thing where people come up and say, like, when you know you've done a gig and it's been like a 7 out of 10, a 7.5, and you think, okay, well, it was like passable, but like, I know I can do better. Mm. And I don't know if it's a British thing, but like people come up and say, oh, I really enjoyed that. I almost find myself going like, no, you didn't.
Yeah.
And they're like, no, I really enjoyed it. You think, you didn't enjoy that. It could have been better. It could have been a lot better. And then you almost get yourself into a little sort of like back and forth or whatever. But yeah, I don't know if that's a British thing that we just deflect praise, maybe.
I mean, I was listening to Mark Maron and he was talking about that and how you can't, I'm trying to learn not to, if someone says they enjoyed it, I just try to say, oh, thanks so much. I'm really pleased you enjoyed it. And because I have been guilty of saying that, of, you should have been here yesterday, you know, because then the roof really came off then, you know, that was a good one yesterday. And then you've taken their experience away from them and made it in, they're gone, oh, right, I thought that was good. So, you know, we're in no position to make people wish that they'd been there on a different day, you know. But I'm definitely guilty of that. And I just want everyone to have a nice time. Yeah. And at the moment, there's so much... I think that's all I want to do in my shows is not just make people have a nice time, but just try and put a bit of positivity, you know. I know you guys are big on that, and I think if you've got an opportunity to be on stage and say something to more than one person, then you have to say something that gives instead of something that takes away, you know. Mm. You've got to be, you just got to. I was just on Twitter earlier looking at all the Netflix, like the staff outside, and I just think if you're in a high-profile position than that, as some of the comedians have been putting out specials at the moment, and you are saying something that can make people... It leaves me speechless, really. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I would agree with that anyway, outside of the last 18 months. I think especially after the last 18 months, people need... positivity. Mm. I mean, people's positivity has been battered down, you know, essentially for the last 18 months. We need it more than ever. But I would agree with that anyway. Like, I think I'll be really careful here, a culture of kind of slightly older comedians that they get to a point when they think, I need to start being controversial, or they suddenly start feeling like the world's against them and they've got to start attacking groups and minorities who have it fucking hard already. And I just don't understand that mindset and that mentality. I don't know.
It's difficult, isn't it? I mean, I don't really know. I'm not really qualified to. I just think that what I do know for a fact is that we've at least got to want everyone to just feel okay. You know,
yeah.
That is I've tried to do it all the time of just trying to relate to people in the street. And one way of me doing that is thinking about whether someone has brothers or sisters, just looking at them and thinking, oh, I wonder if they've got a brother or sister. And suddenly it brings more humanity to that person than them just being someone who's in your way at in a supermarket or something like that. And I think that's all I'm trying to do with my ideas and creativity or whatever is I'm just trying to make myself interested in everything. And I'm just trying to pinch myself and prod myself and going, okay, I've got this glass here. Well, what is that? You know, it was made from sand or something. And you go, wow, God, someone's figured out how to do that. And just trying to not be amazed all the time, but just try to not get bored by being alive. You know, it's just ridiculous how numb it can become to a fiddle leaf. You know, a plant, and then you see someone walking home from a garden centre with a fiddle leaf plant, and you go, ah, good luck with that, because they're an absolute nightmare. And then trying to find humour in that, you know.
Don't know. But I was going to say, Rob, is this a journey you've been on for a while? Because obviously your latest book is Strongly Believe in Incredible Things. You know, is this something you've possibly been thinking about for quite a while? Or has that been, has that been exacerbated by the last 18 months of the pandemic? Or was this something you've been working on for a long time?
Well, yeah, since I used to work in advertising. My first thing that I realised that I enjoyed and had any ability at school was art, drawing, and so then I thought, okay, I'd like to do that. So I did art A-level, graphic design A-level, then I did art foundation, and then I did I thought I want to try and keep doing something that I like doing. So I went to university in Newcastle and did a graphic design degree, but that was all about, the degree was all about ideas. They weren't, to say it was a graphic design course, they weren't that interested in how it looked. It was mainly about the concept. So that really plugged me into trying to look at things in a different way in the book, like The Smile in the Mind, and just trying to look at ideas and say, like, you guys are football fans, aren't they? Like that Nike advert for Arsenal, and it was that season when they didn't lose any games, and it was just 1-1-1-1-1-1, draw, and just a list of W's and D's, red, like white letters on a red background, and then it said, I think it was just a Nike tick, and then it said Arsena, and they'd left off the L, you know, and it stuff like that just made me, it made me think, God, some people in advertising, they seem like they're flipping on it, you know, and like the Sony Bouncy Balls advert, and that made me feel something, you know, with the Jose Gonzalez music on it, and like the frog jumping through the drain, and it made me just look at. It was advertising, I think, that made me think, oh, people are having ideas. I mean, I've been to art galleries and things like that. So anyway, doing that, and then I was doing the graphic design course, and then that made me just want to have ideas. And I thought, where do ideas come from? And they come from the world, don't they? But I wanted to try and soak as much stuff as I could up from books and films and things like that. And then, this is a long-winded answer, by the way, but...
No, keep going, it's fine.
I think what I've been doing is just trying to carve a life out for myself where I can keep doing what I enjoy doing. And that is such a tightrope it feels very, very risky. And I mean, I was listening to the Alex Horn when he was saying about you know, the pension and how he prefers working month to month, and I definitely feel like that, but the security net and the safety net when you're trying to write a show about water and take it up to the Edinburgh Festival, you know, there is no pension plan for that. No. And you just got to go, okay, well, I'm going to try and put my faith in myself and see if any... And, but, you know, faith goes a long way. And I think that I've really, Jim Carrey's motivational speeches online, when he talks about faith, like hope, what's he say, like hope walks through the fire and faith leaps over it, you know, and I've always had quite a lot of faith in myself. But going back to your question, when I finished university, I started working in advertising, and that really just made me look at the world, because I was having these ideas for like House of Fraser and stuff, and coming up with these stupid ideas. And I started filling notebooks up, and that was just a retaliation against that. And then I started doing poetry nights, and luckily a bell started going off in my head when I'd have an idea, and it would say, you really got something from this thing that's just gone through your head. I think you should write it down and try and share it. So then I started looking for places to share it, and it was at like a poetry night and stuff like that. And then I just want to, yeah, it's funny, isn't it? You know, you just want to share anything that I feel might make someone feel slightly okay for a second. Because if I've had an idea and I go, oh, I like that. Like I was walking down the tube platform and a little kid said, oh, Dad, what are we doing? And I thought, oh, it's funny that name Dad. And then I thought, oh, if I have a son, his name will be Dad after my dad and his dad and his dad, you know. And then I've said that at gigs for 10 years and I always enjoy saying it. Yeah, sorry, I don't know where I was going to go with that.
I enjoyed that. First of all, long-winded answers are absolutely perfect on this podcast, so please do continue with those. We like long-winded answers.
Okay.
You talked there about feeling, about an idea and how it can make you feel. And that reminded me about something I saw somewhere, and I'm very bad at pulling up anecdotes and where they've come from. And it may have been linked to advertising or something. I think it was advertising, about how advertising is actually about making the consumers feel something, and then that's how they actually connect with the product, because they don't just look at it and see it, they feel it. And I think that's kind of the same with art and with creativity and poetry and comedy. It's you are trying to make the audience laugh, obviously, but you're... if you can make them feel something, and often that can be the good feeling that comes from laughing, then that's how you connect. And that's how we all connect as humans. It's about feeling. And it's the same way that if you have a good idea, you both know what it's like. You have a good idea and you execute it and you feel alive. Like, and you know that, oh, this is the thing I'm supposed to be doing, because you feel different than you did half an hour earlier when you've done that thing. So, yeah, it was just that really struck me when you talked about feeling, because I think that is essentially kind of the core of one, humanity, but two, also the creativity we're all trying to do.
Yeah, 100%. I think so. Yeah, it's feeling is everything, isn't it? And there is that quote. Do you follow Nitch on Instagram? NITCH, which is just a black and white photo, or a range of black and white photos and loads of good quotes. And it's
no, but I'm going to now.
It's there was one on there. It's a very famous quote, and I can't remember what it was, but someone was saying about, if you can make they'll forget everything, but they will not forget how you made them feel. And, you know, you meet people and they can strike you with their instant warmth, and you go, oh, what, whoa, okay. This person's got some good energy. What? And then it's just amazing that. When that and that the strength of humanity in I think everyone, and it's just about us trying to bring it to the surface. And I think that's what I'm really trying to do, is just, I know that I'm lucky enough to have been born to be a human being, and you go, oh wow, okay, well, how can I try to fulfill my potential to be this one of these unbelievable creatures? And how can I bring my humanity to the surface of myself and articulate these feelings that we all have? Because it's ridiculous how connected we are.
Yeah.
And it's immense. And, you know, I think that is what... I mean, I don't know if I suffer from depression or what, but I know that I get very, very sad at the state of the world. Mm. And I know depression can be more of a chemical imbalance in your brain. But, you know, it blows me away when people just seem like they're all right, when you go, have you seen this? What have you seen? What's happened? Oh God, yeah. And I want to have faith in people and humanity. And that is one of the things that has been really difficult over the past couple of years with the people who are leading in this time of crisis. And that is such a downer. So it's yeah. just been, obviously, this is stating the obvious, but you just go, imagine if we had someone who was just so full of empathy and love and was guiding people, and we had a leader that we could look to and go, oh yeah, or maybe twice a week they would do a speech that was the best speech ever, and all the countries would be looking to us and going, oh, this person, they're amazing, what a leader. And that person is in this country somewhere. It's just that they probably yeah. haven't had the same opportunities as the Prime Minister has at the moment to get into that position. And it's like, we're trying to... I think that thing about bringing people to the surface again.
Yeah.
And but that's where money comes into it, isn't it? And it's like trying to cheapen life with money, and we shouldn't do that, but it just happens, and it pisses me off so much.
Yeah, well, it's not a fair system. I mean, society in general.
No.
But fairness is so important,
yeah,
isn't it? And to live in a system that doesn't seem fair, and you see, I live in Hackney. You see people, there's a lot of people who you would class as street homeless in Hackney near the bus stop. And, you know, it's just, I just feel, I don't want to become numb to seeing these people's situation. And I want to try to help these people, but I don't know how to do it. And it upsets me so much. And then you see the people drinking the black cans of with the K on it, and it's the super strength. And I think, well, okay, well, maybe if that shop there stopped selling that, but then I think, well, no, that isn't the answer. It comes from something before that, and before that, and before that, and before that, and you go, wow, okay, well, I'm clearly hugely underqualified to even have a thought about how this would situation would be better for these people, you know. But it doesn't stop me feeling and going, oh man, you know. And I think that's why some people it is possible to become numb to things, because there's so much for us to go, whoa, God, I can't take this on as well.
Mm. Yeah.
And then we carve out our worlds for ourselves, but I mean, empathy has to be big at the forefront of everyone's mind. But you know, I don't want to come on here and have a rant saying I wish the world was better, but what can you do?
Well, but we all do. We all wish it was. Mm. And like what you're displaying there is huge amounts of empathy and compassion to other people. And I know, Giles, that's probably something you deal with as well, because I think we all... The system isn't... Okay, we are getting a bit political. The system isn't built so that one person...
It's rigged.
Yeah, it's one person like you, Rob. You can't do one thing that then changes the system for that homeless person or other homeless people. but it doesn't stop you feeling about it. And, you know, Giles, I think you're probably the same. It doesn't stop you having that compassion towards those people. And sometimes it's hard to know where to channel that.
Oh, that's the thing for me, is finding somewhere to, how to challenge it, channel it. Mm. Because like you, Rob, I can be very sad some days just because I'm looking at what's going on in the world. And, you know, it's obviously exacerbated by social media to some extent as well, which, you know, I fully admit I'm probably addicted to. But, yeah, and it's where do we put that? Where do we put that angst? And you know, we can do things on a small scale, but, you know, it's the bigger things that I feel so powerless to do anything about. And that's hard.
Yeah. I think that, I mean, the good thing is that we live in a world where books exist. And that isn't a plug for my book, by the way. But
that was my question that I asked.
But yeah, the good thing is books exist, and I strongly believe in incredible things that's available from all books.
Seamlessly done.
I was reading The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle.
I know it. Yeah, I know it.
I've only just started it, so I don't know it that well. But I am going. When I started that book, I thought, I am going to read this book so much it is going to become dust in my hands. I'm just going to read it and read it and read it. Because when I read the first 30 pages of it, my brain just calmed down so much. When he said that the brain is a tool, it is there to carry out. It doesn't have to be on all the time. You can just rest, and all the thoughts that are going through your head, just look at them and think, oh yeah, that's a thought, and you go and pick it up when you need it. It doesn't have to be going all the time. And I suddenly thought, oh my, yeah, of course, okay. But and then I haven't read it for about 3 days and I'm covered in angst again. But it really did help me out, and I'm quite big into mindfulness. And the guy Thich Nhat Hanh, when he's saying stuff about like walking with your feet and not with your head, and just feeling your feet on the ground, and I love anything like that can calm us down
massively. I'm a big fan of Gelong Thubten, who's a
Buddhist
monk. Oh, he's great. He's he's written a book called The Monk's Guide to Happiness. But I had the privilege of talking to him a few years back, and he did a mindfulness kind of practice with me, and he talks about being on the tube and feeling the rumble of the tube under his feet and feeling the bag on his back and all that kind of stuff. And honestly, you just feel so at peace when you're in that, when you actually take the time to think those things through and do those little stages. And now, when, you know, if I'm ever feeling, you know, I suffer from anxiety, but if I've got those anxious feelings kind of boiling up, I try and do that and actually kind of sit and plug into my physical self and then start to, it's remarkable how much it does to you, actually, in a positive way.
Yeah. I mean, we're very busy, like internally. You know, as in this thought, this thought, this thought, this thought. And, you know, the internet is exacerbating that, isn't it? There's a whole world of these people who are just going, all right, chill out. Don't have to be like that, you know. Just breath is everything. Just focus on your breath. And, getting a dose of that every now and again is good, yeah, but then anyway.
Well, there's
I was going to say, God, Jim, sorry.
I was going to say that there's a lot of ways to distract ourselves, a lot of really accessible, quick ways to distract ourselves. I had a moment where I realised that I do need to sort of spend more time, you know, with nothing in my ears, nothing in front of me, and just like focusing on myself. When I was running during lockdown, so I started running last year during lockdown. I'm sure everyone sort of did, because you had your 1 hour state-sanctioned time to be outside, and everyone's thinking, I better fill that with exercise. And I had a couple of times where I was running, and my battery-powered earphones. I sound such an old man. What were they called? Wireless earphones. Ran out of battery. Ran out of battery. And I was like, shit, I've got nothing to listen to. Oh my God, it's literally just me and my thoughts now for the next 10 minutes. And it was actually really freeing because I couldn't focus on anything apart from just running. And then I was able to suddenly hear, because I'm very lucky I live in the countryside, so running down a nice sort of country road, hear the birds, hear the leaves swaying. And actually, it actually took away that distraction. And I was able to just, and I had to just focus on the running and the breathing because I'm not very good at running. So I had to just focus on that to get through it. And actually, it was very sort of, I don't know if centering is the right word, but yeah, it was like the universe took away that electronic thing from me and was like, do you know what, mate, just next 10 minutes, focus on what you got to do.
Mm.
And it was kind of a reminder that actually we do have a lot of distractions, and I don't know, sometimes I think we can just turn them off.
Yeah. I wonder if that, you know, when those moments come to you, like if you had gone out on purpose and said, I'm not going to use my headphones today, I'm just going to listen to the birds and the tree, it probably wouldn't have had the same impact on you.
Yeah.
Mm. Would it? And it's that those unexpected times of when just going with the flow, and you go, oh, I haven't planned this. This is, and those are the best times, aren't they? When you do just go with the flow. Someone says, oh, my mate from out of town's coming to stay. I know you haven't met him before, but you know, let's go. And then, you know, or you go to a party that you aren't being expected to go to, and then you just get taken away with it. And I think that thing, just the free flowing of you going, oh, okay, yeah, I am alive.
Yeah,
not everything has to be rigidly planned. And those moments that wash upon us of, I don't know, a tube breaking down, and you going, oh, this is annoying, but then you might overhear a conversation that cheers you up or something like that. And it's just so fluid. And trying to make it too rigid is just doing my head in.
Yeah. Those moments, actually, you just reminded me, those moments of like when the tube breaks down, you're going somewhere and you think, I've got to be there on time. And then I'm going to be a bit late. And then like tube or bus breaks down and you think, okay, I'm going to be really late now. I'm actually going to be so late that it actually doesn't matter. And I can actually just be like, fuck it. This is out of my hands. This is completely out of my hands. I'm at the mercy of TFL/the universe. And that is a moment where you do just sometimes step back and think, oh, fuck, what is the point of me worrying? I'm going to get there. It's going to be okay. And that is another sort of moment where, again, it's sort of taken out of your hands. And again, you have to go with the flow of whatever mess is happening. But I've had that a few times.
Sorry, Jim, I was going to say, my favourite bit of that is when you obviously start to have camaraderie with the fellow passengers who are also, like, in this, you know, you're obviously all in a state of stress to start with. And then when, you know, obviously when you just start to sort of get to grips with what's going on, you end up sort of finding out about what people are doing in the day. I know I've got to get here at this time, and you know, and you start to have conversation. And obviously talking is a beautiful thing when you can have a proper conversations with people and find out about them. That's quite a lovely thing, actually, in those moments.
No, 100%, yeah. I mean, we live in, as I said, in Hackney, and there's a lift that comes up to the flat, and I had never been in a lift with a stranger before. Weirdly.
Well, you've managed to survive all this time without being in a lift with a stranger.
Crazy, I think. But there was a guy in there the other day, and I said, after, you know, lived here for 2 years, never been in a lift with anyone else. And he was like, oh, right. and then I got, you know, and so, you know, sometimes it's good to talk, and other times just keep your mouth shut.
Yeah, but that guy's been thinking, ah, amazing. I like his lift virgin, you know.
Yeah.
He might then be saying, the craziest thing happened to me today. I was on lift with someone that was not on a lift. And then that becomes a little thing, an anecdote that you tell people. Or something. You never know your little ripple of what you've done, even if you feel like, oh, whoops, that was embarrassing. You never know where that ripple goes.
And this guy from Yorkshire didn't have any clothes on either.
But going back to your book, Rob, was it something that, yeah, this is obviously something that's been a bit of a lifelong journey for you, because you said going back to doing your stuff with advertising and working in that industry.
Yeah.
But obviously the book, was there a catalyst for writing the book? Was it just felt like the right time to write the book?
Well, I've had a couple of shorter books with my writing and drawings in before, but with this one, I'd done the podcast last year and just wanted to find a home for all those ideas, really. And with the title, I Strongly Believe in Incredible Things, I just wanted it to be almost like a low-key celebration of the incredible things, really, or me. I mean, what's the saying? A creative journey through the everyday wonders of our world. And I guess it is that, but it's funny, isn't it? It doesn't take long for it to become the next thing. Like, right, okay, I've done that. What am I doing now? And that never stops, you know. And that makes me, over the years, that has made me realise that the finish line isn't where it's at. It's all about the process. Yeah. And the you know, it might be good if you got like a couple of people clapping you at the finish line, but the enjoyment comes from making yourself get out of bed and do it and I really like Bruce Springsteen, and he's so big on the empowerment of working hard and just that feeling of the fact that you have pushed yourself. And so when I was putting the book together and doing the drawings, the best feeling wasn't opening the box and seeing the book finished. The best feeling was me feeling like I couldn't be arsed, but making myself sit down at a desk, and 3 hours later, I've got some stuff that I'm like, oh yes, I'm pleased I did that. And that self motivation of just gritting your teeth is that's where the gold is for me. And the good thing is that we can do that. We don't need anyone else to help us to do that. We can push ourselves and make ourselves the best versions of ourselves that we can be. And I mean, I've been, when doing the Joe Wicks workouts and stuff like that, I don't know, I don't do it that often, but when I do, he's always talking about how exercise makes you feel better. And I think it does, but other things can make you feel better as well. Like sitting down and make yourself work on something when you don't want to do it, that's good for your brain.
Well, it's empowering, isn't it, what you're just saying there, because it makes you realise that the ability to do things and achieve things and change and progress, however you want to translate that, it comes from within. Like, it is in you, and that's a really empowering thing to remind yourself. Oh, actually, yeah, I can do this thing. I don't have to rely on someone else. I can make this happen. And I think that can be a really powerful thing to remind yourself. If you are going through a blank moment, or you're having that time where you know things aren't happening, or you feel like you're not progressing or whatever, and everyone has their own different things that make them feel frustrated.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can do it. Absolutely. I think that's the important thing to remind yourself, I think.
Yeah. I mean, you get like handbags, don't you, to say, I am, I can, I will.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's stuff like that. I love motivational video. I watch motivational videos on YouTube all the time. These ones that are, you know, they're the most empowering music, empowering voice, empowering this, empowering that. And it's like, is it Tony Robbins?
And he's the famous one.
Yeah, and stuff like that. And you know, sometimes it can be scoffed at, but. Every morning in Edinburgh, when I'm at the Edinburgh Festival, I watch one of those videos, and it makes me go, right, come on, you've got to give it some. And I remember I watched one with Will Smith, and he was talking about relationships and how it's impossible to make someone happy. You've got to make yourself, you've got to work on your half and then bring that to the table. And then that will hopefully
make
the other person, you know. And I don't know, I'm not, you know, it's difficult to stay motivated though. End of sentence.
No, I agree. It is difficult to stay motivated. So what does keep you coming back to do it? What does keep you motivated? Are there things, specific things that keep you motivated?
I think that I'm motivated by wanting to make something that I've never made before. I'm just starting a... No, what motivates me is the magic that I've felt, like, in my professional thing, of with the gigs, of those feelings in the room that I have made for myself. And I've made myself feel a certain way, going back to feeling. I'm motivated by feeling, and I want to feel that again, of you sat down, you did the writing, you put the work in, you practiced, and you made yourself and other people in that room feel something that they didn't feel, and they felt it because you were alive and you did it. And that motivates me. Like, I'm starting to write a new show about crowds called The Crowd Show, and I was sat last night, I was writing this stuff out. Oh god, this is crap. Rubbish. But then, you know, you keep plugging away and doing it. And so now I'm motivated to want to make that the best thing I've ever done, because I want to, I guess I'm motivated by growth. You know, I want to grow as a human. I want to read. Do I read enough? Probably not. Do I write enough? Yes. Can you be a good writer if you don't read enough? Probably not. You know, and it's this internal battles like that. And like, I'm also motivated by fear of feeling like I'm in a good situation at the moment. Got a nice place to live, and you know, my girlfriend Victoria. You know, I guess I'm motivated by fear of that, of becoming a worse person and losing her, you know. So then you go, okay, well, I'm motivated by the fact that, like, I had a thought of myself in the future. I want to look at myself in the future as an old man and look at myself, and I want to see myself with a decent jumper on that looks like it's clean, you know. And I want to be someone who's closer to love than loneliness, you know. And I want to be someone who says someone's names, and because if you do that, then it means that you've got people around you, you know. And at the end of the day, people is the biggest motivator that there is. It's like, I want to try to make myself to be the best version of myself I can be, so that then I've got a chance of other people being around me as well.
Yeah.
And I want to be around other people and try to help them. Not that a lot of the time people have got to help themselves, but if I'm motivated by anything, then it would be, I want to go and do these shows in Edinburgh, and I want to have an electric time and switch people on as well with regard to comedy and performance and poetry or whatever. And be motivated by old ideas, thinking, am I ever going to have an idea that I like as much as that one? And that's a big source of anxiety for me. Like, one of my favourite comedians, Mitch Hedberg, when he was on one of
his specials
where he's going, my old shit works better than my new shit. I am out of ideas, you know. And then, you know, a few years later, it's just, you know, and I'm motivated by, you know, it's a serious business. If you stop being motivated, or your brain starts playing tricks on you, it can lead to, you know, people dying. And I'm motivated by wanting to try and keep on the right path, which is bloody hard, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because it's our brain's going, hey, come on, why don't you go this way? You're like, no, I'm doing all right here. I want to do this. So it's like, that is it. That's motivating.
Yeah.
Of just not wanting to go down any, not letting the voices in your head screw you over until you're dead.
Yeah. those voices, your brain is constantly kind of like trying to push the boundaries, isn't it? And there is, God, I've read about this somewhere, there is scientific reason that they sort of, it's why when you're driving down the road and you suddenly think, I could just drive this car off the road right now. It's like your brain saying, you're not going to, but you could. Like, that's the boundary of where your limit is right now. You're going to stay on the road. Yeah. Your brain is constantly sort of giving you these messages that's like, well, you could do this, but you're not going to. But, like, you could. And it's like testing your limit. And it's tiring. It's really, really, really tiring to try and constantly kind of battle against those. And as you say, keep on the road, I guess. I've come up with the analogy there accidentally. But, yeah, it can be tiring.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, it's not easy, is it? It's not easy. I was watching that. What's the SAS program where they get normal people to run up hills with the heavy rucksacks on their backs? I was watching that. Right,
is that the one with Ant Middleton?
Yeah.
So SAS sort of survival challenge type thing.
Absolutely brutal. But
they're pretty harsh, aren't they?
Yeah.
So they throw them out of a helicopter at the beginning or something like that.
Into a
ravine or something. Yeah.
Yeah. And but you know, I was watching them go up the hill. They were climbing up this mountain, and I thought, okay, that's the that's life. And then these heavy rucksacks on your back, you know, that's like all the stuff that we're trying to put onto life.
Hmm.
I don't know. I wrote it down in a more articulate way, but I can't read it out. But there's a lot of weight. And I mean, you guys have got children, haven't you?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Once they get on board, it's like, it changes everything, and I can only imagine that is just so rewarding to have that. I guess everything that we've been talking about changes when
motivation, I think, changes, Charles, at that point, doesn't it? Well, it's weird. You're suddenly like, your life's motivation suddenly isn't about you. It's about this little creature that you sort of weirdly love more than you realized you could. I know that sounds like a cheesy line from like an American like rom-com, but like it is kind of true that you suddenly love this thing more than you really thought you could love anything. And at the same time, they annoy the hell out of you more than anything's ever annoyed you as well. It's this weird sort of complex.
Yeah,
fucking hell, you are annoying. Jesus Christ. But I also like love you more than I've loved anything. It's very weird. And yeah, I think it does change your motivation a bit. What it does mean is that your time literally is limited because you've suddenly got this little creature that needs you. So it does make you, I think, a bit more sort of laser focused on getting stuff done. You think, oh, shit, I've got an hour today. I've literally got 1 hour today. Crap. What's that thing I need to do? What's that thing that I need to do either professionally or to make me feel good? Because I know it makes me feel alive. Right, I've got an hour. I'm going to do it. And it doesn't always happen. I've had weeks go by where I think, shit, I've not done that idea that I wanted to do. But when you do, it does make you feel a bit more sort of on it. So yeah, but it's a weird sensation. Kids are just weird.
Well, I overheard someone on the train. Where was it? I don't know. But they said, I've been looking forward to seeing you all day and you're annoying me already.
Yes. Oh, yes. I can relate hard to that. Yeah.
Yeah. That is so true. Yeah, my boys are going through sort of the teenage years, so we've obviously got that as well, and you start to see the same kind of, well, I guess anxieties and sort of that particularly the teen angst that you were dealing with yourself, and then but you're obviously trying to guide them and support them through that, but at the same time you know that you've been through that as well, so it's that weird
juxtaposition of trying to parent them, but at the same time kind of empathize with them as well. And that's tricky. That's really tricky. That's a really tricky time, I think.
That comes back to something that Rob said earlier, which reminded me of, what is that? What's the saying? It's like, you got to put your own air mask on first, haven't you? Before you help someone else. You know, from oxygen mask. Got your own oxygen mask on first before you help someone else on a plane, whatever. But it's,
there's been so many. Sorry, I was going to say there's been so many quotes misquoted sorry, on this
I've
podcast.
I've absolutely butchered it. But I hope that
that wasn't me having a go at you. But it's, I was thinking that.
But it's like, and again, people say you've got to do it in life. And Rob was saying earlier, you've got to bring the best version of yourself. You can't absolutely. Always help people, but if you are the best version of yourself in that moment, then there's more chance maybe that you can, or they feed off your energy or whatever. And I think that's true with stand up. You know, if you come on stage and you're the best version of yourself, the audience instantly think, "Ah, oh, this guy knows what he's doing," and they feel better about it. But same with parenting. I think if you bring, you got to look after yourself first. You can't be a great parent, and I think that can be translated to a great friend, great brother, sister, husband, whatever, unless you are the sort of best version of yourself, and then you've got more chance of then being a, as you said, Rob,
oh totally,
people coming to you saying names, all that kind of stuff, if you're not looking after yourself first and doing your own oxygen mask. There you go, I've come full circle. I think it works.
Yeah, no, I was gonna say I'm a much better parent when I've had a full night's sleep and I'm, you know, and I've had a good day and I'm, you know, an upbeat and whatever. I'm a much more empathetic and compassionate parent, for sure. And but if I've had a terrible night's sleep and I'm, you know, like all those sort of things, and I've had a bad day, but then yes, of course that's gonna reflect on how I behave, I guess. But yeah, that's something we've all got to kind of get over, I suppose.
But that can be same with any area in life, don't you think, Rob? That if you are looking after yourself first, then no matter whether you are a parent or a brother or a sister or a comic or whatever, it all starts with you. Sure. And that almost sounds too simplistic.
I think so. Yeah, it's just wild, isn't it? It's just completely untamable. You know, you can try to think, I'm going to put this in place, I'm going to put this in place, and then something will hit you out of the blue and you go, okay, well that's out of place now, that's out of place. And then that's what's so impressive, I think, about a lot of like the human condition is the resilience and how adaptable we are to change. And just blows me away, really. I love trying to look at what reality is for other living creatures and just think about what they're doing, you know. Think about what they're doing makes me think about what we're doing, and the ants on the pavement, and what's reality for them? It's probably as harsh for them as it is for us, you know. And we're all going through it, and yeah, just got to keep going.
There's probably ants doing podcasts about, oh, you know, when you've got the big leaf at the back and you're at the back. It's fucking annoying, isn't it? Why can't I be at the front? You know,
I was wondering if there's some sort of ant Brexit type thing that was, you know,
yeah, like foreign ants coming over here, taking our leaves. How dare they? Oh, sorry.
Going back to your book, Rob, I was interested by the subjects that you chose. You know, you've got things like obviously being born and nature, water, sleeping, as I know is one of them, and obviously arts, obviously something you're very passionate about. Yeah. Why did you choose those certain things? Or were there other subjects that you'd like to have done, maybe there'd be a book too, or were there ones that you maybe started but sort of fell away because they weren't quite right?
Well, basically, with some of the work has been in the shows that I did in Edinburgh. Sure. So did a show about water, and there's a chapter on that, but also I've been writing a lot of new stuff with it. But all the subjects, water, sleeping, people, I try to write about things that aren't going to, that are going to age well, and I do that with my shows as well, because the sky's not going anywhere, no, I'm going to write about the sky. I'm going to write about people. I'm going to write about talking.
It's future-proofing it.
Exactly, yeah. I'm not going to write about Boris Johnson. He's not going to get anywhere near. And I don't want to muddy it with stuff like that because there's so much brilliance out there. I want to focus on that and that because I wanted to write about positive things, really. Well, they're not positive for everyone. I think that I want to just try and stay sensitive to the world and you know, trees, bits of stick on the ground that used to be a tree, you know, trying to think about where that's come from. Would I be able to find this tree that this stick has come from? Is the branch still broken? Can I put it back together like a jigsaw? And just trying, thinking about just, you know, the amount of red blood cells that we're making. 2 million red blood cells every second, isn't it? Something like that. It's like,
it's crazy. Yeah.
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 It's just, and it just makes me feel like I'm vibrating and I'm so much more than I think I am when I'm sitting down and watching an SOS program. SAS program, you know, like that. Oh yeah, your body's an absolute miracle, Rob. Okay, whatever, you know.
Chuck me out of a helicopter.
Chuck me out. Yeah, see if I, yeah. Throw me onto some tarmac. But no, it's. I'm just trying to, as I said, I'm just trying to. With the book, it's just trying to affirm my own life, really. Mm. And go and just try and keep stock of it and go, I'm alive. This stuff exists. Don't ignore it. And I try to make myself look, and I do that by writing. And I try to make myself live, and I do that by, you know, I feel alive when I write something down and I've never written it before. Sometimes I don't. Sometimes it's just rubbish. Sometimes, but the only reason why I continue to do it is because sometimes I make myself feel proper, you know, and that's all I want to do, really. And I think that's one of the difficult things is that with comedy, especially, is that you get you have ideas and you share them, and it isn't always it's not always plain sailing. You know, it's sometimes your brain tells you something's good when it isn't, and you say it, and people are like, "What are you on about?" And you go, "Okay, well, that's just for me that one then." And but you know, what are you supposed to do? Keep trying. It's just trial and error.
Yeah, I wanted to.
That's what the book is. It's what everything is.
I wanted to ask you, Rob, actually, about your writing process because you're clearly someone that writes a lot. Do you have anything in particular you do when you're writing and it's not going the way you planned? Go for a walk, something like that, or do you have a particular set way that you write at a certain time of the day? Anything like that? I'm always interested in people that are writing a lot as to what their sort of process is.
I mean, when I was doing the, I did a daily podcast last year that was just a home for my ideas, really, called the Rob Orton Daily Podcast. And with that, the best thing about that was that all the ideas that would just normally go into my notes folder and sit there, I had to turn them into something. So the process is, I'll be walking around and fingers crossed I have an idea that I like, and it normally takes a couple of days whether I should turn it into something or not, if the idea is strong enough. But I do, the mornings are early morning or late at night. I mean, that is the best time for me to do writing, but thinking about it, I haven't really done that. I've just been writing stuff down in my notes, and then I just go at it whenever at the moment. I think that, I mean, what I've got my notebook here. I like that quote by Leonard Cohen where, this isn't really relevant, He says, if I knew where the good songs come from, I would go there more often, you know.
yeah, absolutely.
And so if there was a place where I could go to get all the good ideas, that's where I'd be going. I'd be going, I'm just going to that place again where that, you know, brilliant, and that would be my process. But, it, you know, for me, to look at someone like Leonard Cohen and think that he thinks some of his stuff isn't very good, you just go, whoa.
Yeah.
And then I was reading that book by Nick Cave, who's a big hero of mine, and the Sick Bag song, where he wrote all the notes on the sick bags of aeroplanes. And he was saying that he was backstage at Glastonbury and he met, and he knew that Bob Dylan was on the same day. And Bob Dylan came up to him backstage and said, I'm not going to do the impression.
He's like, oh, I thought you were going to do Bob.
I like what you do. And then Nick Cave said, I like what you do too. But then Nick Cave said, and then they shook hands. And then Nick Cave said, Bob Dylan then released Time Out of Mind, which was a Grammy winning success, and I released Nocturama, which was an absolute flop. And I love that album, and I just thought,
I do too. It's a brilliant album, yeah, I think.
And I just thought, flipping it, Nick Cave thinks that album isn't very good, and obviously choosing, like, you go, what? But then, you know, you and like Bright Eyes, Conor Oberst as well, when he's talking about, you know, I write these songs and I think that they're going to be hits and they're not, and you go, hold on, mate. These songs are absolutely brilliant and mean so much to so many people. But maybe he even thinks, why isn't this a chart topper? You know, or why isn't he like got his albums? Why isn't he like Bon Iver? You know, but he is.
Yeah.
But he probably maybe he looks at Bon Iver and goes, I don't even know. I'm getting into deep waters that I'm out of my depth in, but. Even the people at the absolute who were my heroes are unsure of themselves, and you go, right, okay, well, I guess surely they've got some sort of self esteem going on. I don't know.
I mean, I guess, Rob, that actually brings us quite nicely back to what we were talking about at the beginning with regards to your gig, you know, and you sort of, when someone says to you, I had a great time and it was a really good show, and you sort of said, you know, it wasn't my best kind of thing, you're taking away that enjoyment, that love of that particular thing that that person has experienced in that moment. And I guess it's the same with music or books or whatever it might be. We as a creator might feel like it's maybe not our best bit of work, or we doubt it in some way. But actually, the person who's consuming it, it could be the thing they love the most in the world.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry, go on.
No, I interrupted you then, and that is not good. But I, even with this conversation, it always in my mind, I'm going, okay. Is this going to be an episode that they like, you know? And, you know, I'm living in the thing of going, okay, we've done an hour and a quarter now. What's going to happen? What's going on, you know? And it's always there, the internal monologue of self-doubt of going, they probably haven't liked this as much as I thought they would. They probably thought I was going to say more interesting things and get quotes right and things like that. But, it's just, what can we do?
Yeah.
We're just muddling along and just trying to keep going. And, you know, once this finishes, I'm doing a gig tonight. I'll go and get sorted out for that. And then I've got to do a work in progress gig on Sunday. And then it'll be next week. And you go, okay, well, let's get into that. And then it's just absolutely just getting pulverized all the time.
Yeah.
And you go, all right, well, I'll have an apple. That might help. I'll have a glass of water. I'll cook a healthy meal tonight. Let's just keep going and keep trying, and not get too bleaked out by watching Handmaid's Tale over and over and over again.
Well,
Well, Rob, I have to say, I think it's been an absolute joy to talk to you today. Honestly, so many thoughtful, insightful things that you've said, and you know, I'm going to just take a lot away from
we don't what we
talked about today. And
sorry, I've done the same thing there. I've talked over you there, Charles, as well.
It's all right. I'm fine. Sorry. It's fine.
We don't often get episodes actually that we take a deep dive like this, and it's actually genuinely fascinating to do so. And as Giles says, there'll be a lot of takeaways from me as well. Not least the fact that I've got a new book to buy as well, because I've been googling that while you guys have been talking. The Power of Now. I'm definitely going to get myself a copy of that. So thanks for the recommendation there.
Yeah, do it, man. But before we go, I wanted to ask you about poetry, because I love poetry. I love reading it. I love writing it. Mm. And obviously, you know, poetry is a big love of yours as well. And I just wondered if you've always been into poetry. I mean, I think I wasn't particularly academic at school. I didn't do very well. But I think in English classes, poetry was one of the things I really loved. And then joining bands, writing lyrics and stuff. Have you always been into poetry, or is that something you found later on in life?
No, I mean, I was thinking about my English class. One of our things we had to do in an English class, GCSE, was we had to review the trailer for the film Titanic. What's that about?
The trailer.
Just crazy. So no, poetry wasn't really a big priority for them. Like, okay.
What was in the trailer for Titanic? I guess King of the World bit and it sinking. I guess that's probably...
Yeah.
Kind of it.
No, exactly. Yeah. And then, but poetry really became the bigger part of my life when I was working working in advertising. Mm. And I'd always liked, I liked writing. And when I was a bit younger, I saw Ivor Cutler live from Bloomsbury Theatre on BBC4, and I'd never seen anyone used words like him before. And the person before that was Bob Dylan. The way that he uses language just knocked my socks off, basically. And Highway 61, that album. And but when I saw Ivor Cutler, I just couldn't really believe it. And he made me look at the world in a different way. And so I got all his stuff. And then when I was working in advertising, I'd been filling these notebooks up with just ideas, really. And then the creative director said, I'm having a poetry night if you want to come to it. It's just in my back garden. I said, I've been writing some stuff down in my notebook. I don't know if it's poetry or not, but can I come and share the ideas, you know? And he said, yeah, okay. So I stood up on their wall and did a gig. And then they said, do you want to come and be a part of our poetry night that we did in...
Amazing.
...in London. And then... you know, I'd never been more nervous ever than doing that first ever. My first ever gig was I couldn't eat for, well, at least a day and a half or something. I was so nervous. But it paid off. And I love what Paul Weller says about being like nerves showing that you care, you know. And I just want to try to care about what I do. And since then, yeah, poetry has become a bigger part of my... Some of my favourite nights ever have been in a poetry cafe in Covent Garden, where it's open mic night, and it's... You get 5 minutes, and the variation in voices that are at that night is just... you don't know what anyone's going to say. People are reading from all different, you know, phones, tablets, bits of paper, books, you know. And the amount of ideas that go into your head from thinking about what people might be saying are like, oh, that's a good idea. Are they going to say that? Are they going to say, oh, they didn't say that. All right, well, I'll have that then. Cheers very much. And then just, and you, it's just, the power of words. I mean, it's, poetry. It is. I want to read everything. I want to read everything, but I'm coming to the terms now that when I go into a bookshop, I'm like, okay, well, I'm probably not going to get to read all these books before I die. But I've been thinking about, you know, between us, everyone on the planet, we've probably got it covered. You know, yeah. Everyone will read the book. A book. So everyone's written a book. You know, the books have been written by someone, so they've read it and written it. So right, that's good. At least every book has been written by written and read by someone. But no, I know that I would be a better person if I had read every poetry book on the shelf. So maybe that's what I should do, but it doesn't pay very well. That's a problem.
Poetry. Reading
poetry.
Reading, I was going to say. Poetry, writing poetry doesn't pay that well either. It just feels like, it just feels like it's an overlooked art form in a lot of ways. And I love it. And I just wish it would get more prestige and accolades and stuff than it should, because I think it's just such a wonderful
genre. It goes back to what we were saying about feeling, you know. If you what's going to make you feel more, a poem or the front page of the newspaper? Depends, doesn't it, what the content is of both. But I know that it is a feeling of, you know, it's trying to articulate that feeling of walking somewhere and seeing a tree that's I was in Highbury in Islington, Overground, and I saw a tree that was just so perfect in shape, and I just thought, oh, it had such an effect on me. And I guess that's the job of the poet, to try to articulate that feeling of seeing that tree and the shape of it and that how it made you feel. And I guess the better the poet, the more accurately they can give that specific feeling to you over the page. So when people, poetry, like critics and things like that, or people who say that they think they are more of an expert in poetry or anything like that, it does my head in, because it isn't about that. It's about just everyone just having a go and just saying, this is how I felt here, or blah, 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 you know. Yeah,
thoughts on a page, I would say. But yeah, it's thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Honestly, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much for your time. And it's been really, really great conversation. So thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for having me on.
Pleasure.
There you go. Rob Orton on the Blank Podcast. A fascinating guy. So thoughtful. But the thing is, when you've got intelligent, thoughtful guests like that, you need them to be open and candid and feel free to share their thoughts on things. And Rob did that fantastically. And we were able to really sort of bury down and go deep into a lot of areas and interests and issues. And I could have spoken to for hours, really. Fascinating guy. And I really appreciate him coming on and talking about the things that worry him and his processes and everything, really, and his recommendations. Mm. You know, some of the book recommendations are fantastic. So, yeah, I'm sure our listeners will have got as much out of that as I did, because I found it fascinating listening.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, I was so thoughtful, and I just... there's so many takeaways from it. I want to really listen back when we don't do a lot of editing on the podcast, as listeners will know, all the mistakes are left in. I'm looking forward to sort of listening back to this one and really sort of dissecting some of the stuff that Rob said, because he's clearly, you know, really in tune, like I said at the beginning of the podcast, in tune with the human condition and very thoughtful. I keep using that word, but it's this sort of seems like the most apt word to use, really, just being very thoughtful about the world and how we react and act as humans.
Yeah, and I think if you are that sort of person, it's never a wrong way to be. I think you'll always do right if you are thoughtful, because it means you're probably thoughtful about other people, you're thoughtful about yourself. And I think that's, and if you're someone that's trying to work out the world and see how our place in it, then I think you're always going to be going down the right path, in my opinion. And I thought it was really interesting And when he was saying, and it's probably something that a lot of our guests feel, but it's the first one to have said it in 150 pods, whatever, that he was thinking throughout the whole episode, am I saying the right thing? Are these guys enjoying this kind of thing? And I wanted to say back, I didn't get to. Rob, we're thinking the same thing. Yeah. We're thinking, right, is this question I'm about to ask good? Have I got a question coming up? Yeah, what do I say at the end? We're all doing it and doing that internal audit and edit. But it was interesting, actually, as a guest saying, him vocalizing that and saying that. So I thought that was actually really, actually quite freeing, him saying that. So yeah, that was really interesting.
Oh man, it's something, it's a phrase that we've used quite a lot, but post-match analysis, yeah. I'm terrible afterwards when we've recorded, thinking, oh, that was so shit at asking questions.
But it never is. It never is.
Well, that's very
kind. We've never had one episode.
It's very kind of you to lie, Jim.
But it's not. We've never had one episode where we've had to cut anything or where we've not put it out. Like, it never is. It's never as bad as you think it is. No. And no, you know, I never notice anything that you do that I think, what's it done there? You're noticing more things and I'm noticing more things about myself.
Mm.
And Rob is of himself. Like, it's a human condition, as you said. And
yeah,
it's interesting hearing a guest actually sort of vocalize that for the first time. I thought that was
interesting. If it's something you love, you know, which, you know, I very much love this podcast and making it, then you're always going to be kind of,
yeah,
you want to put like an arm around it and make sure that it's the as best it can be, you know.
Yeah.
To use a football analogy.
Which you know I love. But like he said early on, if you're nervous about something or you're anxious about it, it's because you care about it. And I nearly then did another football analogy because I clearly mentioned former Palace player Sean Derry. Obviously, you and I will know who Sean Derry is. Hopefully, some of our listeners, fans of Leeds and Pompey, probably will.
Notts County as well.
Notts County. Actually, got to know him through doing the Palace podcast. Really, back at Palace now coaching. Fascinating guy. Really interesting guy. We should get him on. But he used to say early on in his career, he'd throw up before football matches. And he's not the first player. Lots of players did and probably still do, because he was so nervous about playing and being in the changing room throwing up. But that's only because he cared. Yeah. In fact, if you've watched Sean Derry play, caring is the first thing you would say. The heart on sleeve, and he cared about every game he played in. But yeah, this is a top flight professional footballer still doing it. So it's something that can affect all of us because we care about what we do.
Absolutely. It's, you know, like you say, it's just a natural thing. I think if you do love what you do and you care about it, then yeah, you're going to take it seriously and think about it all the time and worry about it and be anxious about it. I guess that comes with the territory, unfortunately.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, great episode. Thank you so much to Rob for joining us. Thank you to our patrons for supporting us. Please do join our Patreon if you want to hear more from Rob at patreon.com/blankpodcast. We love our patrons. We love all our listeners. Thank you to those guys that have tweeted in and everyone that tweets us. We do appreciate it. And if you've enjoyed this week's episode and you want to let us know, or any episode, please do tweet us, Facebook us, or Instagram us. Our handle is the same. It is
@blankpod.
Indeed. And we would love to hear from you. And that's it. Charles. Well, a little bit behind the scenes. This is our second one recorded this week. Two in a week. It's been
I know.
Put them back to back and crack on.
Yeah. And I was about to say, before we started talking about football analogies, this may be the only podcast where we talked to the guests and there wasn't any. But then we've ruined it by doing it in the tail.
Oh, but no, but he said something about football.
So we just couldn't get away with it.
No, even when we didn't.
One day.
It'll never happen. There'll always be.
Sorry to any non-football loving people.
As long as I'm alive on this podcast, there will still be a football analogy each week. Anyway, I'm going to go off and think about how I can cram in a football analogy to next week's episode. But until then, Charles, have a good week, mate.
And you, Jim. Take care.
And thank you. And same to our listeners as well. Have a good week. Take care. Look after yourselves. In the words of Dr. H, # keep safe, # be kind. I will see you next week on the Blank Podcast.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This is a Blast Box Media Podcast.